understand that anti-war sentiment as such does not undo a war agenda. And what we have to start doing is really striking at the legitimacy of the Bush administration. This war is criminal. It's a violation of international law, the UN Charter. It has devastating consequences for Iraq as well as the entire region. It's using weapons which are prohibited by the Geneva Convention. It threatens to use nuclear weapons. People don't realize that because the media are not talking about it, but they have said quite specifically, we want to liberate Iraq. And then a few days earlier, they said, we don't exclude the use of nuclear weapons to achieve that objective. So we have to start now targeting the legitimacy of the main military actors. That means, that doesn't mean only the Bush administration. It also means the Canadian government, the Canadian military, the Canadian defense industry, which is involved in this agenda, and we have to start building a very cohesive network of anti-war committees at the local level, rather than relying on the big events and big rallies. Those are important, but they have to lead into much more of an organic organizational focus on the war agenda, in which we have to unseat the war criminals and reverse the tide of war.
I wonder if, Michel Chosedesky, if you can tell me about the economics of this war. Maybe you can explain that for our listeners.
The main underlying objective of this war is oil. It's the conquest of oil reserves, not only in Iraq, but in the broader region. We're talking about 11% of the world's oil reserves as far as Iraq is concerned. That's almost six times those of the United States of America. And if we look at the broader region, Iran, Iraq, the Arabian Peninsula, the Caspian Sea Basin, we're talking about 70% of the world's oil supplies. And the issue there is for the United States military to ensure really to conquer those regions and hand over these oil reserves to Anglo-American oil transnationals. The reasons why the Europeans are against this project is that they have a very significant stake in that region, in particular the European oil conglomerate Totalfinaelf, and also the Russians are there. They've signed agreements already with Iraq and Iran, so that the war is not simply a war directed against Iraq. It's also a war which intends to exclude competing oil conglomerates from that region. There are other underlying objectives of this, economic objectives of this war, but that's one of the major ones. But we have to understand that the clash is also, there's a clash between the United States, or what I would call the Anglo-American alliance, on the one hand, against the competing rival economic financial powers of France and Germany, and particularly Germany, which controls the European monetary system.
And I wonder, Michel, if you can also speak to the role of Canadian companies trying to get into Iraq after this war.
Well, indeed. I mean, first of all, the Canadian Canadian interests in the oil, the Canadian oil interests, which are which are linked up with American counterparts. We know that the Canadian oil industry and the U.S. oil industry are very tightly woven together. But there are other aspects which are now coming to the forefront. That if you take any of the major pieces of military equipment which the U.S. are using, whether it's an F-16 fighter jet or B-2 bomber. Or even these controversial Apache helicopters. Well, the Canadian defense industry is supplying their U.S. counterparts with spare parts, technology, and so on. And we are part and parcel of the North American defense industry, It's billions of dollars for the Canadian defense products export industry, not to mention the fact that we also produce uranium, and that is also exported to fuel the production of nuclear warheads. So all these things, of course, very crucial. And what I have noted is the ambivalence of the Canadian government, because on the one hand you have statements by the Prime Minister which are purely rhetorical statements where they say we're against the war, blah blah blah, but then you realize that the Canadians armed forces is collaborated hand in glove with in the context of NORAD, and they integrated into the whole command structure of the U.S. military. And they have Canadian forces which are on the ground. In fact, the participation, the decision to participate in this war, was taken on the 16th of October of 2001, when the Canadian Prime Minister, dispatched Canadian destroyers and frigates to the Persian Gulf. And at the time, the announcement was made that this was intended as a contribution to the war against terrorism in Afghanistan. But if you look at the specification of these vessels, they're not made to wage war in the highlands of Afghanistan, which is a landlocked country. And anybody who had looked at the military specifications with surface-to-air and torpedoes and anti-submarine equipment would have seen very clearly that this was already part of a military contribution to a war on Iraq. I wrote a piece dated November 2001. Which precisely points to that, and nobody in the media or the parliament has actually underscored the fact that this participation of Canada in the war on Iraq has already been in the pipeline for at least a year and a half prior to the formal declaration of war.
You had stated that very clearly in Canada there has been a stance of the government against this war, whichever kind of statements Chrétien made, moving on and off of the fence. The same has been true for Germany and France, governments, politicians clearly stating their stance against the war. Obviously, the people in those countries taking to the streets here in Montreal by the quarter of a million people in the streets, but at the same time we still have this military campaign being waged, and we still have these corporations coming, Canadian corporations, French corporations, German corporations, looking to get into the country after the war is over. At what point do people in their resistance, at what point are they able to stop this obvious complicity in ongoing human rights abuses in the region?
Yeah. Well, you see, the thing is that this war, the divisions between France, Germany on the one hand, and Britain and the United States on the other, have very little to do with international diplomacy. They have to do with rivalries between competing oil companies, between competing defense contractors. There's a very significant rift in the Western military alliance. I've looked at this. We've been researching this kind of thing, and people who want to order our magazine can call up. I'll just give you the phone number. It's 1-888-713-8500. That's Global Outlook Magazine, or my book also, which is entitled War and Globalization, The Truth Behind September 11, which is available in English at Chapters, and is also available in French at most bookstores in Montreal. But in any event, what we're dealing really is a clash between the Anglo-American military axis on the one hand, which are the Anglo-American oil companies, against their European counterparts, where you have Total Fina Elf, which is a Franco-German oil conglomerate. You have the Russian oil conglomerate Lukoil. You have very close integration of the defense industry between France and Germany, and in turn you also have integration of British aerospace systems with the Big Five weapons producers, in the same way as the Canadian defense industry is also integrated into that of the United States. So that really what we're dealing with are with competing business conglomerates, where the dominant powers are the oil companies, the producers of advanced weapon systems. We call it defense, but in fact it's the killing machine. And the third, of course, are the banks, the financial institutions. And there you also have the clash between Wall Street, which is the power of the dollar and the Federal Reserve system, but really which is controlled by private banks. And then on the other hand, you have the European monetary system, which is controlled by a handful of European banks, mainly the large German banks, with Deutsche Bank in the lead. And so beneath the polite, discussion at the Security Council, there's some very significant rifts which have developed in the last few years. You also have another situation, which is the rift between the rift in the structure of military alliances. Increasingly, France and Germany are developing military cooperation ties with Russia, which seems absolutely absurd, but it's happening. Berlin and Moscow have a military cooperation agreement. France has a military cooperation agreement with Moscow. They have military cooperation agreements with India, whereas on the other hand, the United States is backing Pakistan. So that essentially, when you look at this broader region of the Middle East and the Caspian Sea basin, which encompasses all this oil, you're really dealing with the rivalry between competing conglomerates. And what the thing is that the French and the Germans, which have taken this position at the Security Council, they none of these foreign leaders have had the courage to stand up and say this war is illegal. It's a crime against humanity. It's a violation of the Nuremberg Charter. Okay. People are saying it in Germany. I mean, they know about that. But none of the politicians, and in fact, and that's where we get back to this issue of anti-war movements. We need a much firmer stance by our civil society leaders, trade union leaders, and so on, where they actually say this war is a violation of international law. It is a crime against humanity. It is a genocide. And that any ambiguous stance by the Canadian government constitutes an endorsement of this war and consequently is also categorized as a crime against humanity. In other words, we're talking about the criminalization of the U.S. state apparatus, but we are also up to a point, we're also pointing to the criminality of the Canadian authorities in turning a blind eye or collaborating directly in the military in theater operation.
Economist Michel Chossedesky speaking on the necessary escalation of resistance against this war. He will be appearing in person this Wednesday at a presentation called Boycott the War, Why and How. Michel Chossedesky also publishes a magazine, again, called, I left the number.
Global Outlook Magazine.
And you said it's also available on the web?
Global Outlook Magazine. You can get it at Chapters anywhere in Montreal, in Chapters Indigo stores, or you can call us up at 1-888-713-8500, or you can go online to www.globalresearch.ca.
Thank you again, Mr. Chossedesky. The presentation this Wednesday is taking place at 7 p.m. at University of Montreal in the Pavillon Jean-Briand, and it's, again, at 7 p.m., room B2215. For more information on that event, you can call 276-6336.